Good morning.
Good afternoon. Sorry, you're right. Good afternoon. The December 13th, 2007 meeting of the WMATA Board of Directors will now come to order. The first order of business is the approval of the agenda. I'm going to ask for unanimous consent in moving a couple of items up, item 7B and item 8A, under public comment period. So, but by unanimous consent?
I'm sorry, 7B and 8A.
7B and 8A. We're going to move up to the public comment period, and then we'll...
You mean to just after?
To after the public comment period, and then we'll resume with item 6 after that. Okay? The first, approval of the minutes from October the 25th, 2007, and November 8th, 2007 board meetings.
Will they be approved as presented?
We have a motion.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. We have the report of the Reviders Advisory Council, Mr. Snyder. Why are you in the dark?
This is the December 2007 Writers Advisory Report. You can read both of my remarks. I went into my last report as the chair of Writers Advisory Report. And I listed in my report, so I want to here. I want to mention that there are three fine members of the Writers Advisory Report. Dennis Jaffe, who will be entering his resignation shortly, who is our chair. Personal reasons. And our high school student, Justin Chittum, is from college. So he's no longer going to be able to serve. I hope that you'll find somebody at this caliber to participate. It's really important to us to reach out to.
From us for bringing that up. If you don't, bring this from now. Same folks for the sake.
So, on the positive side, Lester was made many commitments to drivers in emergency situations, ensuring delays, and implementing a policy of realism. I really appreciate their doing that. They did it outside the fair gate as well as the kiosk. So, those were great things. Of my hometown, Rockville. The RAC and I wish to express our condolences to his family and to his friends. And we ask that during this holiday season and every day of the year, that every driver, whether in a public or private vehicle, be attentive, considerate, and mindful of posted speed limits, weather conditions, and the pedestrians and bicyclists, as well as wildlife that share our roadways. Do this in memory of Mr. Sun and the other senseless deaths, and do this also for your loved ones at home who also share our roads and highways. The matter of the Metro fare increase, I'd like to thank Mr. Linton, Mr. Hoffman, and Ms. Hutchins for their remarks this morning. You heard that Metro was pledged to do a commitment to services by listening to what the public comments have said. We're also aware that there is a deployment of 20% eight-car trains during rush hour. This is going to allow Metro to be able to expand its services. However, once the people hear about this fare increase, I truly believe that they will be walking. And it's unfortunate they will not have an opportunity to see the improvements that Metro will have based on the service improvements and based on the availability of eight-car trains. I'd like to talk to Mr. Zimmerman. I live in Rockville, but I work in your jurisdiction. In my office, or a large number of people in my office, take. However, I know that many of them will start to drive. And one of the concerns that we had, and you heard at the public hearings at courthouse, was that people in your jurisdiction do not want to have additional congestion and pollution. I'm concerned with the way that you chose to finally, you will find the following letter. This discussion this morning indicates that this board will probably vote for approval of an unbalanced fare increase to occur in 3 weeks' time, rather than waiting to explore other options for FY 2009. Personally, I believe you should instead be focusing on growing capacity and ridership to balance the budget and to reduce congestion, pollution, and energy use. However, your discussions continue to focus on protecting the growth in required jurisdictional subsidies rather than providing affordable, quality public transportation to the infrastructure that you are proposing continues to foster a separate but equal segregationist transit system, parking poor, limited English riders and senior citizens off of rail and onto buses and roads. In good conscience, I can no longer work with such a non-visionary board. You do not represent the riding public, haven't truly considered the public testimony, nor taken the advice of the RAC in budgetary measures. Therefore, I hereby tender my resignation from the RAC as a representative for Montgomery County and as the chair of the Riders Advisory Council. Thank you for the opportunity to serve.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Okay. The next item is a public comment period. Robert Groh from the Board of Trade, followed by Michael Syndrome.
Said, as the task force noted, the process is broken. We need to move forward with these recommendations. And work more effectively. As you know, it's cumbersome, time-consuming, and it's uncertain. Not because of uncertainty.
Thank you, Mr. Groh. Mr. Syndrome?
I'm a disabled veteran and I served our country. me to go from the disability office, Councilman Graham, to the sales office, the bag is gone. Now, mind you, I never make mention to anyone where I was going, yet Ms. Jackson, who just doesn't like me, and she slighted me before on some amounts in the cards, but that aside, knew I belonged to me, knew where I was. That bag, if it got any closer to her, would have bit her. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what's going on here. Metropolitan Police took a report, Officer Smith the same day, the perimeter walk around here saying maybe if somebody took the bag and trashed the contents. There was a lot of personal documents in there, constitutional law book, an address book, irreplaceable, sentimental things, right? And it was a pink bag. I noticed there's a lot of homeless folk in and around this area and also a lot of drug addicts. I asked Officer Smith, I asked another Lieutenant Biggs who interviewed Mr. Out, there is no camera. As this headquarters is, there is absolutely no camera. I had a conversation yesterday with Carolyn Stevenson, and we have a detective here who's walking. She deserves a raise. Yes, we have a camera, but disingenuously, the camera is on the inside to monitor that sales clerk, not to monitor traffic outside. So when I press the issue, I said, look, it, law enforcement has told me there is no surveillance camera. You know, we need it. She's on the phone. Today, I tried to make a purchase. Councilman Graham, you were next door. There's an uproar about the contentious issue in revenue. I was told I can't buy a car. It was only because of the assistance of Officer Metcalf here. Says that ain't right. You haven't been barred. There's no reason why. So there needs to be a test here. Surveillance.
Thank you.
The other thing is, fair adjustment, and I wrote a letter to
Okay, Mr. Syndrome, let me do this. If you have your letter, we'll take your letter on the fare increase, and there may be, you've reached your time limit, but there may be some things that maybe you can still explain to also to one of our staff.
Are you the general manager's representative at the moment?
That gentleman over there, I could give some descriptive adjectives, but I won't. Mr. Francis, okay? Mr. Gerald Francis, I'm saying. Okay? Thank you very much.
Any questions
for
the day, justice or just us?
Okay. I see Mr. Briscuso is gone, I think. Is there any, I think that's it, concludes my public comment period. Okay. Mr. Francis, you are on for item 7B.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the board. First year as a Metro General Manager. I appreciate the trust you've placed in me, and I will continue to give my all in return. Also, let me take a moment to wish each and every one of you a happy holiday season. I also would like to echo the board chair's sentiments and congratulate Ms. Hudgens for her re-election and to thank Mr. Kaufman for his long and excellent service to Metro.
7B, are you doing 7B?
Yeah. Remove the agenda.
Oh. Let him finish.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. All right, well, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Finish the state.
Okay.
Finish your state.
Okay. I said as long as you started. Okay.
Leadership over the past years as board chair. From safety standpoint, last week, as you know, there was a tragic and fatal accident involving a pedestrian in Metro Bus. My heart goes out to Mr. Sun's family and friends. We are cooperating with the Montgomery County Police Department in this investigation and will incorporate anything we learn from the investigation into the accident. I'm also proud to announce that Metro Transit Police has earned its reaccreditation from the Commission of Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies, which is a national organization that assesses police department policies, procedures, and practices. Metro Transit Police was also designated a flagship agency and is in the first transportation-oriented law enforcement agency to receive this recognition. As part of the process, law enforcement executives from other police departments reviewed Transit Police from top to bottom, looking at policies and how Metro Transit Police do their jobs on a daily basis. We are especially proud of the flagship agency designated because it means our department is an example to other law enforcement agencies across the country. Earlier this week, we put 20 new rail cars in service, and these cars will be used to increase the number of 8-car trains operating during the peak rush hour. As of this week, 20% of our peak period trains are 8-car trains. We added 3 8-car trains to the red line, 2 8-car trains to the orange line, and 2 8-car trains to the green line. You'll remember that in October, we eliminated 4-car trains during peak service on the yellow and blue line. As we continue to test and accept the new 6000 series rail cars, we'll put more cars into service. We hope the entire fleet of 6000 series cars service next year. We've also decided to go back to running 6-car trains on the weekend and during weekday off-peak periods. Although we tried this to save money and wear and tear on our rail cars, our customers let us know that they wanted those extra cars on the rail service. Let me use this as an example to highlight 2 very important points. First, we move people, not just trains and buses, and I think this reversal speaks that fact. The customer is important to us. Here's the other point. At Metro, we're not about business as usual. We're about innovation and doing things better. We want and need that feedback from our customers. Some ideas will be successful and popular. Some ideas won't be, but we're going to keep trying new ideas to improve safety, service, and efficiency. Earlier this month, we began to test 3 newly designed rail cars in our system. 2 of the 3 rail cars have a new type of flooring rather than the current carpeted flooring. Among the other new features being tested are bench seating and grab bars. We look forward to learning what our customers think about these new features, and we'll do a thorough analysis before we make a decision on expanding these designs to the other vehicles. Now, employee recognition. This month's spotlight is on initiative. And at this time, I would like to have Jim Stevens. Jim, if you can come forward, and maybe you can up on one of those spotlights, Jim. And okay. Mr. Stevens identified a need at Shady Grove. You see, there wasn't a machine shop at Shady Grove, so parts that needed machining had to go to the nearest machine shop, which was at the Brentwood Rail Yard. Of course, that meant extra time required to complete the maintenance, keeping trains out of service longer. Mr. Stevens, a 22-year veteran of Metro, thought there had to be a better way, and he took the initiative to do this step. He scoured Metro and found equipment that would have been sold as surplus because it was obsolete or old, and with a few new parts and some elbow grease, he built a workable machine shop at Shady Grove. The investment he made in repairing some of the tools was less than 1% of buying them, and that investment has already been repaid. It saves us time, and it saves us money. So I'd like to recognize Mr. Stevens for his initiative. This is a trait that's encouraging throughout the authority, and I expect that you'll hear this type of story again and again in future years from our employees. Stevens? I personally want to congratulate you. You know, I just heard Mr. Linden in the committee meetings talk about time, money, and value. And I think this exemplifies what Mr. Stevens has done. Sometimes we don't take that into consideration how much time it takes. But if you can think about having to come from Shady Groves to Brentwood, and this gentleman here looking at scrap parts that he could use, he took the initiative and he took the time to make that happen. So I want to, as Deputy General Manager, I want to thank you too, Mr. Stevens.
Stevens, on behalf of the board, we all thank you as well. That was great ingenuity on you. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry. Mr. Francis, Mr. Graham has a question or comment.
I want to say how much I appreciate several discussions I had this week with our general manager, Mr. Cato, on a hate crime which occurred involving a young man. I'm only going to use his first name, Nathaniel, which has been reported by the press. And Nathaniel was very, very seriously beaten. He was the sole rider in a rail car where 6 or 7, I believe it was 7, youths entered the car and almost immediately began to beat him. And this raised some very, very serious questions. particularly since it was initially reported not as a hate crime, but as an assault. And I expressed those concerns to the general manager, and I just want to say again how much I appreciate his responsiveness, because we have now changed the report of this serious matter so that it is categorized as a hate crime. And as a result, the consequences, once we arrest those who were involved, will be much greater. And there are other consequences as well. We're all very concerned, including Metro Police. I was recently at the Morales dedication, and it was such a wonderful event. But we're all concerned about protecting our riders, and just the thought of being in a rail car alone with seven people attacking you is just extraordinarily frightening to even contemplate. But then to have perhaps a misidentification of the crime subsequent to that, of course, compounds the whole problem. So we're all concerned about protecting our riders and responding with sensitivity and effectiveness, you know, in all crime, but most particularly in crimes which have elements of hate directed at the perception that somebody is in one group or another, and that's always what it is. And so, you know, our laws in the District of Columbia, and I'm sure in surrounding jurisdictions, very definitely take into account perception as well as reality in terms of the protected group. So anyway, I'm open to hearing any comments that have to be made, but I do feel assured by the actions of the general manager throughout the week. And I know he in turn has been very much in touch with Director Hansen. And so I think we're on the right track now, and I hope you will assure me that we will continue to be on that track. I know that Nathaniel has very, very much complimented the detective work, which is ongoing at this point. There's a video which is showing the attackers. You know, there's real serious follow-up occurring, and all of that is very important as well. I don't know, Mr. Francis, whether you or Director Hansen has something you wish to say.
I would just say that we share your concerns about the seriousness of this crime, and certainly it is the mission to prevent crime, and when it happens, to apprehend the perpetrators. And as you mentioned, we've got probably one of the best detectives we have on this case, and he's working very closely with the victim, and we would hope to make an apprehension. In the event that they exhaust all their investigative leads, that's probably when we would choose to share the video with the media. Right now, they don't think they need to do that. But we do take this seriously, and certainly periodically there is in-service training where issues of this matter, diversity training is undertaken, and certainly want to make sure that, particularly in a case of a bias-based crime, that that's reflected, because that does ensure that there are additional penalties when someone's charged.
Add, Madam Chair, that in the event that we're not getting the arrests here, I hope you'll consider. I know this is a sensitive area of criminal evidence and all of that, but I hope you will consider releasing the video to the media, to the public, so that people can help identify the folks who committed this horrendous assault on this young man.
With this case and in the future, yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go to item 8A, and then we'll come back to you again for B and C after we go back.
8A is our report. Yeah. Do you want to come back to me later?
Or? No,
we
want
to do 8A.
Now. We want
to do
8A
for B
now.
And C. Oh,
yes,
I see.
I'll come back to you for
thank
B
you
and C.
Much, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I am pleased and relieved to report that the Committee on Finance, Administration, and Oversight, of which I am privileged to be chair, met this morning, and that we have reported a fare and parking increase proposal for consideration by this board. Staff did present this morning the report on six public hearings held between November 13th and 15th on the proposal to increase Metrobus Metrorail, and parking fees beginning in January 2008. A total of 422 people provided input on the fare proposal, either by testifying in person at a public hearing or by submitting their comments through some written form. Staff has requested approval to increase these Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and parking fees to close what is identified as a very compelling budget gap of $109 million. I do want to emphasize that this comes only after months of action by staff and by this board to do everything we could to close that gap through cuts in expenditures of this authority. But raising fares and parking fees in January 2008 will moderate the magnitude of the fare increases that might have otherwise been required and will protect our customers from larger increases if the board does not act today. So I am pleased to move approval of the proposal, which has been reported by our committee this morning.
We have a motion and a second.
I moved.
Okay. Yeah, we do have a motion and a second.
Right. I moved.
Is there any discussion? Mr. Linton.
Question from staff. The fare increase, if voted today, will go in effect when?
Six.
And I also gather that we have within our proposal a fare differential between cash fares and smart trip cards on those who will be using the buses. What is the distribution plan to expedite the distribution of the smart trip cards?
It's the marketing people have been working on this, but I can answer your question. It's proposed to distribute 50,000 cards. Mr. Brown has been leading that, and he can fill in the details.
Good afternoon. I've talked to all of the social service agencies within our compact transit zone, and they are all on board to distribute the smart trip cards for us to their membership that have demonstrated not only a need but a want for the smart trip card. And we have set a number up to 50,000 that we would distribute to these social service agencies.
I hope we've gone beyond that. Unfortunately, social service agencies only have access to identified clients. There's a serious number of clients who are never serviced by social service agencies that, in fact, do use our system. So I'm hoping that we have some other distribution networks in place that will allow that to occur. One other question. Many of our users are on benefit programs, free tax benefit programs, in which deductions for their benefit takes place way in advance of the actual utilization of the fare. When you raise the fare, it creates some inequities in both in the communication to them and to their payroll systems in making the appropriate adjustments in timely fashion so that their deductions actually match the fare that they would use. So that does create a little crunch. Since I'm in that business, I know a little bit about it. That does create a little crunch for those that use pre-tax benefits, and we're probably one of the transit systems in the country where we have a higher percentage of users that are doing that than many other places in the nation. So I think that's going to be a little problem in terms of this announcement and the effective date of January 1. It will not allow that system to catch up with those deductions. So we should be mindful of that.
There are any number of transitional issues that we, you know, in the policy decisions we've been debating, we haven't really focused on, and these are very much important administrative matters, and we need to know that the staff is aware of them, and to the extent that you're not, that you're going to be finding out and making necessary adjustments. The particular situation that Mr. Linton was just talking about is an example of it. I think it's a larger question. I know that, for instance, we have at least some federal agencies that are now shifting to how they provide their benefits for Metro Fare to employees. And I understand that there's a critical date coming up in which there's a shift to how they're going to have to use them. And the result may be a whole lot of people at particularly key stations that you can identify where the federal agencies are, at which a lot of people are going to be going for the first time to have to download onto their Smart Trip card, for instance, where they haven't had to do that before. So one question that comes up with that, and obviously may relate to this fare action itself as well, is, you know, are we thinking about needing extra personnel on that key day? If we know what day, you know, the federal change goes into effect, then we can perhaps anticipate that there are going to be a whole lot of people with questions and maybe need to have folks other than just the usual person who's the station manager there getting bombarded. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. Woodruff?
We do have a fare implementation team. We're looking at things that you're raising. We're looking at signage. We're looking at implementation dates for reserve parking because of the way the bills go out. If you'd like, I can have that team give you a full report. I can provide a full report of all the issues and how they're going to be handled.
I also want to make sure, you know, that you are on top of that, obviously. Related to the, you know, the earlier point on Smart Trip, there are a couple of different aspects to it. One is simply the distribution of Smart Trip cards as we try to get more and more bus riders to use it, which is an advantage to everyone. Rail riders also, but bus riders are the ones where we're really behind. There was the answer that was given about the distribution through certain kinds of agencies. I think that's a good start, good thing to do, but it's a start. As Mr. Linton said, there's a whole lot of people that doesn't reach. We need to find ways to reach more people, and I know they're working on broader plans for distribution. That's in the first instance just getting cards in the hands of people who don't now have them. But in the other is the question about how they are able to, you know, take advantage of it. And one of the components of this has to do with the elimination of paper transfers. And my understanding is what we have included in here has a delay in that action pending the, you know, efforts to get people to have, you know, fair access to Smart Trip cards. Isn't that correct? So there's is it a one-year delay? And that means that we have to use that year very effectively to do the kinds of things that I think Mr. Linton was suggesting and that I believe the board expects, so that we won't have somebody being basically unfairly burdened because they don't have an easy way to access the main means of payment that we're moving to.
As I said, we, of course, were anticipating that this action would be taken with modifications as it occurred. So these issues are all being dealt with, and happy to get you a full report.
Clinton.
And what that is, part of that is, when we went from the system that we now have in place in many of our garages with Smart Trip cards, one little thing that we forgot to check out was inventory and the ability of our provider to provide a sufficient amount of cards to deal with the rush and increase in demand. I hope that very little but very significant element has also been addressed.
Learned from that prior mistake, yes, we did advance order cards. We do have them in hand.
Okay. Ms. Hudgens, followed by Mr. Graham.
Thank you. I want to take the time to just reflect on what we have before us and what our work has been over really several months. We were brought the proposal from the general manager for a fare increase. That proposal was brought with a clarity that there was a deficit in revenue at the time and that it needed to be done early. We were also asked to look at a fare policy and a procedure that would allow predictability for the fare increase, and that hopefully that we would arrive at a proposal that would reflect fairness for all areas of the region
and users of all modes. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that this proposal does that for everyone. I know that many people have worked to try and arrive at something that would be workable, and most importantly, address the concerns that have been raised by not only the general manager in presenting some of the challenges that we face, given the service delivery challenges we have, but also on our the input that's been provided by our riders. Our goal should be to try and promote transit. This agency serves as a major benefactor and contributor to reducing congestion, improving our environment, and offering folks a true alternative to transportation modes out there. I'm not sure that we have done all of the work that we need to do. We have spent a great deal of time delaying this process. We even spent today removing a discussion of the true policy indexing proposal from the agenda. And regrettably, it appears that we're going to move forward. I hope that with the proposal that we have, that there's an opportunity at some point to reflect back on what we've done and get back to more closely to what we were asked to do and what we should feel compelled to do for the region. We cannot continue to look upon the work that we do as divided by jurisdictions, divided by our personal interests, but really to meet what is a growing challenge for this region, and that is maintaining a meaningful transportation alternative, growing ridership, and trying to find meaningful ways to reduce the costs in order to reflect to that on that demand. So I wanted to make sure that it was clear what my viewpoint was on this. I assume that we may move forward on this, but I think we've missed the mark and that there's a great challenge that's still that's before us here on the authority. And while this may move forward, there's hopefully an opportunity that we can get in our budget cycle and work a little bit more in making sure that we can do better given the next time to come around.
Mr. Graham?
Well, I just want to say that for my part, I think we end up with something that, you know, everybody's leaving this table with something, and this is always an imperfect process. There's no question about it because, you know, we're operating in a cauldron, and quite a cauldron this has been since returning from the summer break in early September. I mean, we have been actively engaged in all of this for 1, 2, 3 full months. And, you know, prior fare increase discussions, I don't recall them being quite as tormented as this has been. But I think that, you know, I mean, is this the fare increase proposal that any one of us would have drafted had it been up to that individual? No. Is this a fare increase that comes out of the decision that comes out of the regional discussions that by law and necessity we have to have? Yes. And the fact of the matter is that this board voted. This board voted to put the proposal out for public comment. This board didn't have to vote to put out a proposal for public comment, but it did. And having defined the parameters in that fashion, you know, we are now today acting within those parameters. And so I think it's been a successful process, not one which has perhaps achieved the result that every single member wants, but certainly as a representative from the District of Columbia, we leave the table satisfied that we have done the best we could. I do want to follow up with Mr. Linton's comment on the Smart Trip cards, because this was an important element for us of the proposal. It was an important protection for those who have the least ability to pay. And I want to be assured by Mr. Francis and perhaps Mr. Brown that we're going to act with as rapidly as possible to get these Smart Trips out to those who are qualified, because this is an important element of this fair proposal that we have before us. And it's one that I think to some extent the press has overlooked, which is that we are providing free Smart Trip cards. 50,000 is the number I'm now hearing. And I think there's flexibility to that number. to people who otherwise would really be very hard hit by what we're presenting today. And so I think this shows the heart of this agency and our willingness, but I don't think we can afford to dally about this. And I would rather see some rough edges, some maybe even some people getting smart trip cards that might not be fully qualified in order to meet the main part of the need here. And there are impacts across the board if somebody has their smart trip card. Now, having gotten these cards out as rapidly as possible, I think we're going to create ridership. I think there are going to be people who will ride in the future that are not riding today. And you, there may be significant additional revenue, who knows. But the fact of the matter is that we're committed to these free smart trip cards for poor people. And so I hope we'll have a report. If this is to take effect on January 6th, I hope we will have a report at our next board meeting about how many cards that are actually gone out, because I think that's the type of thing we're looking for. Mr. Francis, may I have your comment?
I would say that the Smart Trip is going to the top of my list, and I would assure you that we would do every effort to work with Mr. Brown to make sure that this happens and give the board at the board or the committee meeting a full report on the process that we use. We're at that time.
Are there any additional comments? Mr. Linton and Mr. Maname. Okay.
I may want to make a slight correction to the resolution.
That's what happens when you try to verbally introduce a resolution at a meeting. I think the resolve on the service guarantee didn't quite get it. And once again, trying to have some heart, as Mr. Graham has suggested, I think of that mother with those three children, and I think getting service policy with this was not an option to refund customer fares. You may want to look at other service policy guarantee options, but the refund to the customer was not intended to be optional. So I would strike with options to refund.
Options for the board.
All right. Options for the board to consider, I guess it was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would object to that. I think we might have a different, if I may, Madam Chair. I think we might have a different interpretation. I saw this as options for the board to make a decision, all of this is a recommendation to the board.
Sure.
We were not prepared to establish a policy.
Sure.
So I think it's okay leaving it the way it is.
Can we make it clearer, just the options for the board to consider?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have a small.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
There was one change made in committee that has not come through in this, and that was on the, from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth resolve clause, that subsequent to the adoption of fare changes, on the second line, future fare increases. You had requested, and
yes,
the committee consented to change the word increases to adjustments.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Maname?
I'll be very brief. This is really going forward in terms of the study that Mr. Linton from Maryland suggested in our committee. I think it's being both a board member on this board as well as being a director of transportation for a jurisdiction, I have a unique perspective on the effectiveness of Metro. And also sitting on the TBB with other colleagues at the table, I think one of the things that I think Metro needs to become more of is a regional advocate for marrying both our transit and transportation policy, because I think we're talking about issues that don't work if you don't make some changes within your jurisdiction to allow them to happen. So while it's obviously a very difficult and complicated thing to achieve, I think in some terms of marrying both at the TBB level and at this board level, the policies we implement for our jurisdiction so we can one, encourage transit ridership so we can have a... happen, and I'm really looking forward to Metro playing a, or having a stronger and a louder voice in ensuring at least those issues on the table. And so if we choose at a regional level to not do that, at least Metro didn't sit by quietly while that decision was made. And I think that's something that I'm looking forward to seeing over the next year, in the next 2 years, as we develop and work on hammering out what this fair policy looks needs to look like.
Okay. I think I'm going to reserve my own comments. I haven't to the chair's report, which we skipped over, so I didn't see any other hands up. So. Okay.
Vote.
All in favor? Excuse me.
As we're moving to final action on this, I think a few things should be said. Mr. Graham said this is a compromise that reflects not anything any one person wants, and I think that's true. Hopefully, it reflects a balance among the different issues that were brought forward. There are folks, including folks here at this table, for whom it is not a fair compromise, and I have to respect that. And I understand the reasons for that feeling. I have to say that what we originally had, though, to me was not acceptable for the reasons that they said, and I'm supporting what was essentially the Maryland proposal by way of compromise that has as its principal feature the reduction of the impact on long-distance riders. Not necessarily enough in the views of many, but it does do that. And I want to say that because, as I noted the last time around, I don't directly represent long-distance riders. I represent the shortest-distance riders in the system, shorter even than the District of Columbia, as it turns out. Nonetheless, as I've said in the time since we went to hearing in many different forums, I am concerned about the long-distance rider because it has an impact on those of us in the interjurisdictions as well if they don't, if they choose not to use our system. If they choose to opt out and go back to cars, we're not better off. You heard from one this morning who doesn't live in my jurisdiction but works there. Well, there's lots of those. In fact, a large portion of the people who, I think something like two-thirds of our riders actually came from somewhere else who come to Arlington on the system. And the district has some kind of similar number like that. And we have to think about that. And so I think that the move to mitigate the impact on long-distance riders that the Maryland delegation offered is important as a benefit to everyone in the region, not only to some of the constituents of some of those who are represented here. I think we have to be very mindful of that. When I originally made comments to this effect at the original meeting where we advertised the hearing, it was perhaps in a hypothetical nature. The more recent data that Mr. Kaufman presented at the meeting this morning that some of us saw at the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission last week, suggests that it's not simply hypothetical. You don't know at when you reach the point where you've charged so much you're chasing people away until you do it. Now, I don't know that we're there yet, but there is at least enough evidence of leveling off and, in some cases, decline, with, in fact, a slight net decline in ridership in Northern Virginia over the last year, to suggest that, we better be careful here. And again, it's not a radical change, but when something turns around from years of growing, it isn't a radical change right away. You notice it after you've passed it. And we have enjoyed a lot of years of transit growth in this region, and I do mean enjoyed, because our region is greatly benefiting because of this. We have to make sure we keep that going in that direction. And so we really have to all be mindful of the risks to our system if we turn off people who, for one reason or another, have to go a lot farther to get in. There are things you can fix in the short term, and there's things that take a long time to fix. And so the first rule needs to be, first, do no harm. I think that what we have before us in the choice here today is between the risks of going forward with a fare increase, which any fare increase, there's always the potential that we're gonna have harm in one way or another from those who either are chased away or to make a different choice, and those who don't have a choice but who are transit dependent and therefore are harmed by the additional cost. On the one hand, we have that kind of risk. On the other hand, we have the other kind of risk of not acting. And we heard again earlier someone talking about that we should focus on growing capacity and ridership instead of fare increase.
And let me say, everybody up here, everybody on the other side of the table agrees growing capacity and ridership is what we need to do. The question is, are we going to assist that by not changing fares at all? And I don't believe for a minute that that would be the result. The problem is not simply protecting jurisdictional subsidy. Jurisdictional subsidy is going up. It went up before, and it's going to go up on the budget we're putting forward, unless, of course, the jurisdictions say no to us. And then we don't have any choice after that. These are decisions made in a lot of different places, a big part of which is made in a state capital, in a state in which I don't live. And the people who make that decision don't necessarily live in our region or in the jurisdictions from Maryland represented here. And they have all kinds of other budgetary considerations. I mean, I'm picking on Maryland, but I think it makes the point that somebody in Annapolis has to decide about funding for here and think about what the implication is on Baltimore. And none of us have any say on what that is. And they make some judgment. And all those debates in one jurisdiction after another will ultimately determine whether or not we get the difference between what we raise in fares and other revenues and what it costs to run the agency. If we wind up a little short, what happens is that service goes down. It doesn't get better. And if you want to think about this in real concrete, practical terms, it's not that it's draconian or drastic, but think about it. We just heard earlier today in the report from the general manager that the system's going back to 6-car trains on the weekends after running 4-car trains for a while. Now, think about that. We're running the exact same number of trains we were running before. It's technically the same level of service, at least in headway terms, and technically it was able to accommodate the number of riders. But, in fact, as soon as we went from 6-car trains to 4-car trains, something that saves money, immediately people notice it and say, what's going on? Immediately reporters start calling and saying, hey, what's going on? And immediately the attention of the system is brought to bear to the point where it's reversed. Now, as one who rode on the weekends and saw that and experienced it as well, I'd say, I'm glad we have 6-car trains back. It not only means you're less crowded, it also means people get on and off trains more easily because after a while, people accustom themselves on the platform to the length of train they're used to, and when you condense the train, you have all those other problems. I'm glad we're going back to 6-car trains. But understand, if we wind up short of revenue, that's the least of the kind of changes we're talking. That's the first thing that happens because that's the one you do that technically doesn't reduce service. But, of course, it does reduce the quality of service, and people experience it right away. We had an experience a couple of years ago where the similar thing happened. We went to 2-car trains late at night. And everybody thought, you know, well, gee, it's the same number of trains, there aren't as many riders, but immediately there was an impact. We heard about it, and we wound up changing it. So this is, I mean, this is at the margins. This is the easiest stuff if you start running out of money. After that, you start doing things that are really painful. And on the bus side in particular, where after years where bus ridership went down, bus service went down, we started to turn that around. We have a long way to go. But bus service is a lot better now than it was 10 years ago, and we've had a period of rising bus ridership after years and years of decline. We can lose that in a hurry. And so I really believe, Madam Chairman, that we need to move forward with this comparatively modest fare increase. It's, you know, some people are, it's not going to be small for everybody. It's, you know, I understand that. I don't want to minimize the impact on somebody who's going to pay at some of the highest levels here. But it is not draconian, and it will still leave us with a fare policy, a fare level that is below that of many major metropolitan areas right now. You can go to comparable systems that have, before us, raised to a level higher than we're going to be at after this. And I think that it's about an appropriate level. I think it's the best we can do. I think it is better than the alternatives of not doing anything and running the risk to service or doing something more drastic with the risk to ridership. And so recognizing that this is not the way I would have drawn it up in the first place, and it is certainly not perfect, I think that it is appropriate and best for all our riders and our region that we move forward and approve the motion that's before us. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
You want to do it by show of hands as well? All in favor? Okay. Opposed?
In case you didn't guess, it was
okay. Right. Please let the record reflect that Mr. Kaufman did oppose. We do have the resolution in front of us, and so it has just been passed. So thank you very much. I'm going to move now to my chair statement, which will address this as well. There are a number of, this is the last board meeting of 2007, and it's been a very, very challenging year on so many fronts. And I need to talk about a couple of things. It's been challenging for me as well to come in as chair, and I've been here for 8 months, and I think we've hit every issue just about that one could imagine. We've had additional new members on the board of directors. We have a new general manager, and we've had tremendous reorganization of Metro staff. We've taken steps to set Metro in a new direction, to operate more efficiently, to improve safety, to communicate more effectively, and to be more responsive to the needs of our customers and community. And clearly, if we didn't get anything else today, we know that we are not done yet. We still have areas where we need a lot of work. Change is not without difficulty, and we have suffered major setbacks. Just as you heard earlier, just last week, a pedestrian, Mr. Sun, was fatally struck by a Metrobus in Montgomery County. The accident was the fourth fatal Metrobus pedestrian accident this year. Despite our best efforts to improve safety and raise awareness about pedestrian safety, we still have much work to do. And we have to do it, and we've got to be better. No death is ever acceptable. And our hearts go out to the victim's family and friends. Metro must continue to make changes and safety enhancements to ensure that this type of incident never happens again. Now, along with safety, fiscal responsibility has been another major topic of the year. Metro made significant cuts and program changes that yielded $34 million in savings. However, those cuts were not enough to keep pace with rising inflation and operating costs, and we were faced with a fare increase. It was not always easy to discuss and agree upon an issue like fare increases, which has such a widespread impact across Metro's ridership, but I do want to thank my fellow board members for their cooperation. We've heard extensively from our staff and from the public, and we've finally reached a compromise that met Metro's budgetary needs and the needs of many of our riders. Now, with regard to the fare increase, this has been very, very difficult. But one of the things that I've learned, that I've observed in my short 8 months, is that this board is committed. This board is committed. We didn't all come down the same way, and we've had various iterations. But the problem is we had a major $109 million problem to deal with, and we all went and struggled and tried to find ways to deal with it. Everyone may not agree, but we tried to find compromise. As Mr. Graham indicated, and actually Mr. Zimmerman indicated, it is imperfect. It's not the plan that we would have come up with at the outset, but it is a plan that works, that we hope works, and has a measure of compromise that we hope will address the budget deficit that we have. One of the things that someone said earlier in the committee meeting is that you didn't, or actually even here, that we didn't hear our riders. We did hear our riders. We did hear our riders. And not only did we hear with our ears, we listened intently. And the we've seen charts and graphs and exhibits that says this percentage says this, that percentage of the people say that, but most important, at least to me, was to hear the individuals and their stories. The actual impact that the fare increases have on specific individuals, and that was invaluable to me. And I think it was invaluable to all the board members. And we all listened intently, we all took notes, and we tried to grapple with these things, and we haven't been able to address everything. That's clear. But as you can see with the resolution that we just adopted, and the resolved clauses that are in there, we're struggling, and we don't want to be in this mess and quagmire ever again. And that's why we're stretching to try to find a fair increase policy and something that will work in the future. So I do want to thank the board for their diligence, for their untiring and unceasing efforts. And I do want to thank, on behalf of the board, we want to thank all the riders and the citizens who came out to all those public hearings and those who wrote in, those who actually wrote to us or emailed to us and got their comments to us because they were concerned and we heard them. I just wanted to say that about the fares. On a more positive note, there were two items that I wanted to address. On November 28th, like many of the other board members, I had the pleasure of attending Metro's Disability Awareness Event. And that was that many board members and top Metro managers traveled with a customer with a disability either on buses or train or Metro access vehicles from various locations in Maryland and Virginia and the District of Columbia. I traveled with Mr. Vandendriesch, who is blind and hearing impaired on the Orange and Red Lines. And it was a great opportunity to find out what it's like for a person with a disability to use our system. And Metro has made great improvements in terms of accessibility, and the forum was just one way that we were enabling us to continue to hear our customers' concerns. Now, I thought that experience was invaluable. And actually, I think 14 of our top managers, board members and managers and leadership participated in that. And so many it was really very eye-opening for all of us. I actually thought it was amazing, and we couldn't have, words alone could never have conveyed that experience. There was no substitute for that experience. And we saw so many things that we can fix that don't even cost money. There are some other things that will cost money, and I hope we are about the business, Mr. Francis, of fixing those things that were addressed. But it was an invaluable experience, and I do want to thank everyone who participated, and I'd like to thank Christian Kent and the Assistant General Manager for Access Services and his team for coordinating that event. And we thank you very much. And while I'm at it, let me say happy birthday to you as you reach this milestone that some of us have seen before already. I think you've seen a few more than that, Mr. Linton. Okay. Now, on another note, on November 30th, I, along with others, including Mr. Graham here, attended the dedication of the Metro Transit Police Marlon Francisco Morales District 1 substation at Fort Totten. And the new station is named in honor of the courageous late Metro Transit Police Officer Marlon Francisco Morales, who was fatally shot at the U Street Metro Rail Station in June 2001. He was the second Metro police officer to be killed in the line of duty in the history of the Transit Authority. It was a very, very moving dedication ceremony, and justifiably so. And Mr. Morales, Officer Morales' family was there, his wife, his kids, his parents, his siblings, and I know that he would have been very, very proud. Metro has always placed a strong emphasis on safety and security, and the Metro Transit Police Department is part of the reason that we have such a good reputation for being one of the safest transit authorities in the country. So on behalf of the board, we're proud to recognize the wonderful work that our police officers do on a daily basis. The new station will help our officers better serve the community and provide much-needed space for future growth of our police force. A few other acknowledgments I'd like to make. The American Public Transportation Association, APTR, recently awarded Metro with 3 AdWheel Awards, which recognize excellence in public transportation, marketing, and communications. All 3 winning ads were part of our Go Green on Metro campaign, which emphasizes the environmental and economic benefit of using Metro Bus and Metro Rail. Metro was also awarded for its illustrated Go Green Wrap Bus ad, an outdoor ad called High Gas, which compared high gas prices with the economic advantages of taking Metro, and a public service announcement that featured 2 trees talking about how public transportation keeps the environment clean. So I'd like to thank and congratulate Metro's marketing department for those ads, because we did win some things. And so those were all good things. I had intended to announce them at the last meeting, but it was pretty hairy in here then. Now, on a bittersweet note, I'd like to highlight a newly retired Metro employee, William T. Raymond Bill, who retired on December 2007 after 38 years of service to WMATA. Bill is here today with his wife. Yeah, you have to stand up too. And we want to highlight him because after 38 years of service, or in that 38 years of service, he issued over 1,000 audit products and identified this is really important, tens of millions of dollars in savings during his time at Metro. That is amazing. So we'd like to thank Bill for his excellent work in the offices of the Auditor and Inspector General, and he is a great example for his colleagues and with fellow Metro employees. And I had the opportunity to talk to him earlier, and he's looking forward to hanging out with his wife and his grandson, Drew, is what he told us. So congratulations, Bill.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could you find 109 more? Then we don't have to do any of this.
Hey, imagine what it would have been. Okay. So I'd also like to thank Mr. Cato for helping my job, helping me along as chairman of the board. But I'd also like to take this opportunity and thank another special person who's here today. Calvin Skinner, who is our acting board secretary, who abandoned us, but actually had a very good opportunity, and we didn't have an intervening meeting to properly thank him. So he stepped up to the plate for us and stepped in during a crazy time here at WMATA and served as our acting board secretary and did a yeoman's job. We wanted to invite him back. We wish him well in his new position, and I'm going to, come back to you, Calvin, because I do have a plaque here for you, but I want to finish my remarks, I think, and then give the plaque to you, okay? But we thank you so much, Calvin. And on that note, even though there were big shoes to fill, we've got someone, Landa Chambliss, who may be able to fill those big shoes. I'm going to call her the Bob Lanier of my day, and who can fill those shoes. And she's going to do an excellent job taking over him as our acting board secretary. She's already stepped up to the plate very, very nicely. And on behalf of the board, we thank you too, Leander. And then we have another retiree who's here, Frank Bell, who's chief of the transit planning at Prince George's County Department of Public Works and Transportation. There you go. Come on, stand up. There you go. So he informed me today that he's retiring, too, and then this is his last day. So we want to congratulate Frank as well. Two board members I'd like to mention. One is staying with us and one is leaving. First of all, I was very remiss a month ago during some of our heated discussions, and I forgot to do something at our special meeting that I intended to do. And so now I'm going to make amends and congratulate Catherine Hudgens on her reelection to Fairfax County's Board of Supervisors. She's done a yeoman's job. That's a wonderful victory in Fairfax County. It's a wonderful victory for us, and we look forward to continuing to work with you in 2008. And then, that's my drum roll. We want to thank Dana Kaufman for his many years of service. He did not seek re-election this year, and so we have to lose him because we'll have a new Virginia representative. And he has served on the Metro's board for over 10 years now. 12 years now.
That's
see.
What I was keeping. So,
and how many? 12 and how many days? Right. That's right. And he's been a tremendous advocate for public transportation and all of our customers. You heard him today. He struggled. He presented his plan today. He tried to come up with a plan that was really fair for everyone. And I can tell by all the number of the conversations that we've had with him, he's got just tremendous energy. He's really committed. He gave his best. And the people in this metropolitan region are so fortunate. I don't even know that everyone realizes what an advocate they had in Dana Kaufman, but we sure do at WMATA, and we want to thank you very, very much. And we have something for you, so you just have to stand up and wait a minute and have your photo out. And I'm sure there may be some others who have something to say. But Dana Kaufman, Board of Directors, 1996 to 2007. Is that math right? Okay. And
This is where my ashes go.
I'm going to. I don't want to say anything. They can fit in there. They wouldn't have fit in there before.
They wouldn't have been there before.
Okay. And see. Oh, this goes on. Wait. I'm going to have you hold this. Okay, that goes. This is heavy.
It is.
Okay, and this actually goes on top of this.
You're going to make it heavier.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful.
Would anybody else like to say anything today? Mr. Benjamin?
I'd like to comment. I'm very sad that Daniel Catena is leaving us. I've had the opportunity to work with him during his entire 12 years on the board here.
And first, as a staff member, myself as a staff member, and him as a board member, and now as a colleague on the board, and during that entire time, he's been an extremely solid person to work with, somebody that I've been able to respect and I've been able to trust, and somebody who supports the staff. He's been a very special person who cares about our customers. He's been committed to public transportation and to this agency. It's been a pleasure to work with somebody with those kinds of values. And most important, Dana's always been able to rise above his own jurisdiction's interest to support regional imperatives. And I think, as such, he represents an excellent model for what we all aspire to as board members. Dana, thank you very much for the experience to work with you over these years.
Anyone else? Okay. Mr. Monomay, followed by Mr. Linton.
Probably have the shortest of all the board members here, but a couple really brief words. One, Dana, as a fellow originally from the Midwest guy, the only thing I feel bad about that is that you're actually from Iowa versus Ohio, because, you know, you'd be in the national championship with us. But I really appreciate getting to work with you. One is your persistence when I was here on staff. You worked really closely with you to get things done, but then also I've been really impressed as a board member, and even before as chief of staff, about your thoughtfulness in dealing with issues, really thinking through things and presenting what you felt to be in the best interest for the authority, mindful of what it meant for your folks, but really thoughtful about issues. And I think that's something, again, I think as Peter said, we want to all take a piece of that back into our work in the following year. And so I think we're going to miss you. Wish you best success and Godspeed in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I guess having served in an elected office myself for a number of years, I've always made a distinction between elected officials and public servants. And Dana, to me, is truly a public servant. Those are skills and attributes that are unfortunately going on the wayside as people get elected these days. I'm extremely excited and happy to have had the opportunity to serve with you. I know the difficulties that you face as you make decisions to leave public office and pursue other things in life, but that also sometimes gives you an opportunity to get another perspective and also recognize that you have a family that will love to see you and be able to serve with you as well. So I wish you well in those pursuits. And Madam Chair, if I may, let me say something that I didn't get a chance to say earlier. Michael Snyder has chosen to tender his resignation as the head of the Riders Advisory Committee. And I understand Michael's frustration in being an advocate for the positions that he very forcefully and very articulately have been able to put forth to this board. That is going to be a loss, quite frankly. When you take positions like that in performing that role, you don't necessarily see from the score the influence you've had on the game. And even though the score may not reflect that, your influence has been there. And sometimes you need to recognize and step back and look at that. But statements that you have made, the way you have postured yourself, the positions that you have taken has influenced this process. It has influenced this board. And even though you may not see sometimes the direct delivery of those changes that you would like, you are making progress. You are influencing our thinking and our shaping in the way we're moving forward. So your service has been good and effective. So I just wanted to share that with you. And hopefully you will reconsider, but to both of you as you move on to other things, if you choose not to come back here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Linton.
I have the privilege to serve with Dana not only on this body but on others, as Virginians in particular, and most recently last week at the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, where he has also served for 12 years. And the downside of this is that I'm getting to see a succession of farewells, and it's painful because for what is now a significant portion of my life and, you know, my career in this work, I've been able to count on Dana being there, and he is really somebody you can count on. And we don't necessarily always agree. We haven't always necessarily voted the same way, but Dana is somebody who I have always had immense respect for and complete trust in. And I think that that is something people will tell you who've worked with him, regardless of their partisan differences, geographic differences, anything else, and whether they agree with him or not. And it is really one of the things that makes it possible to get excited about doing this work when you have colleagues like that. I've learned a lot from Dana in many different ways, but I have to say I've just really liked working with him. He's one of those people, even when you don't agree, you can look forward to the fact that you're going to be sitting next to him in a meeting. Among the things we will miss, of course, is his unique wit, which certainly has, you know, pierced more than a few meetings that we've all been involved in at times, often to good effect when we're taking ourselves very seriously. But I also will miss his counsel and wisdom, and I'm hoping that he's going to find a way to still stick around so I can, at least I'm on the same side of the river with him, so I suspect I'll still be able to get together with him. But for his service here on the Metro Board in all the time that I have been here, I do say thank you and good luck.
Hudgens?
Everyone is saying goodbye, Dana, but I'm not saying goodbye. Because, first of all, I just want to share the perspective that I have of Dana, not in as a farewell, but simply a colleague and someone I've gotten to know very well for more than for all of the 12 years that he's been involved in Metro and before then. I think what I would like to say to you is that you have a great advocate that will not be working with you, but I think directly with you, but I think that will be working for you, because Dana has been committed to this authority and the regionalism that WMATA has. And even though he will not be a member of this board or an elected official, he will be a customer that will be not only dedicated to you, but I think you'll also hear from him in more indirect ways than direct. And I think it's all because of some of the things that you've all said. Dana is clear about what he believes, and he is clear in articulating that. And once he has done that, I think he's usually finished with it. He doesn't really need to spend a lot of other time letting you know where he stands. He moves away from the issue, and he moves on. And he does it in such a professional way that I think it benefits the dialogue that goes on when Dana is in that discussion. So I think, one, we've benefited an awful lot from what he has brought to us, but I think you will also know that grounded in that is what Dana will be doing in the future, and how he will interact and what he takes away to the larger public on what this authority is about and its importance. So Dana, I'll be seeing you around an awful lot more.
I'll be very brief. I've known probably Dana the shortest time. But Dana, thank you for your advice and counsel, and may you have fair winds and following seas in your new career.
Mr. Graham.
Well, everything's been said, but not everybody has said it. So let me just add my commendation to you, Dana. When I came on this board, there was Kate Hanley and Dana Kaufman. And I began to think there's a certain Fairfax style that revolves around a turn of phrase, and as Chris Zimmerman said, a particular wit. And it truly has contributed, because you have a very light touch, and you know how to diffuse situations with just a few words. I mean, as recently as this morning, we heard something about 6 inches of, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was very cleverly put. And you do that again and again and again. I just want to specifically recall, though, the year in which you were chairman of this board, because
I don't want to
recall it at great length, but I do want to say it was one of the toughest years, you know, for this authority. It truly was, and there were major changes, major controversies, major tensions within this organization, such as what I hadn't seen before as a member of this board, and quite frankly, I haven't seen since. And the way in which you not moderated, but led that situation, you know, and I had strong feelings, others had strong feelings, I think really made the critical difference in terms of our ability to come through all of that and land squarely on our feet. So in addition to all of the style and all of your knowledge about transportation, I mean, your leadership skills have really contributed to us, and I thank you for your public service.
Now, Mr. Kaufman?
I will be perhaps even more brief than some of my colleagues. The two things I've been most proud of in the 12 years, the first was actually September 11th, 2001, and that's an odd day to pick. But that's when this authority kept running when virtually everything else in this region shut down. We even had the specific request from then Chief Ramsey to shut it down. The then General Manager Dick White said no, we weren't going to do that. All the senior staff got together, but perhaps even more significant than all the senior staff, all the men and women who are the faces of this authority that our customers most frequently see, stayed in that train, excuse me, or stayed on their bus until they got everybody home, and they went right back in. I didn't expect this. They overcame their nervousness, their concerns for their families, to take care of ours. So. And then the other was thanks to my colleagues for helping us get the Riders Advisory Council off the ground. It's still a bird fluttering to get even higher off. But we got it started, and I think in the 30 years we've operated before, we somehow managed to try to guess what people are thinking. Now we know, and I appreciate very much all the people who have served as chair of that organization, and I'm sure this board will find ways to continue to work with the Riders Advisory Council. As for colleagues, I just say thank you. I've loved, fought, argued, and succeeded more often than failed with you all, and I very much appreciate how you helped me grow as an individual. And just echo Gladys Mack's comments on the way out that this is first and foremost a regional group, and we need to continue to work hard to keep it that way. So thank you.
Chair, I would like to deliver the balance of the report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee, if I may, please. The second item that came before us this morning was the Southeastern Bus Garage. The staff requested approval of various reports and assessments to increase the capital budget by $60 million to establish an operating reserve account for $9.25 million and to negotiate a property exchange agreement between Metro and the District of Columbia. I move approval.
Of discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it.
Madam Chair, the final matter of business to come before the committee was the approval of the Largo closeout. Staff requested approval to settle the claim for $9.5 million for work on the Largo extension project. Under the fully reimbursable agreement with the State of Maryland, the Maryland Department of Transportation will pay the $9.5 million to settle the claim. I move approval.
Discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Benjamin.
State of Maryland is going to pay this amount and support this action.
But we do so very reluctantly. We are extremely concerned and very upset about what happened that brought on this situation, which is costing the state $10 million. It appears to us that there has been substantial mismanagement by the authority in this matter, and one that we end up being responsible for. There has been inadequate communication with a jurisdiction that was actually paying the bills. And finally, we don't believe that we got adequate legal support during the mediation. Again, I second this and I move. We support it, but we do so reluctantly and with severe misgivings.
Any other comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay. All right. We still have a couple of things, and then we're going to go to Mr. Zimmerman. I want to get Calvin up here. Calvin Skinner, and I know the board wants to thank you. So we appreciate your patience today. I do have the other part of my report was the resolution for the appointments to the Riders Advisory Committee. Stephen, we're going to reappoint Stephen Cerny, Yacomini, Lillian White, and Robin White to represent the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Second motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. While we're doing that, we do, on behalf of the board, Mr. Snyder, we do thank you for your service. I'm sure it's a thankless job sometimes, but we are hearing you. So we do thank you very, very much. And as you can see, we have some challenges, but we are trying to get on the right track here. So thank you very, very much. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Planning Development Committee has no action items for you. We did get a brief presentation on the findings of the Joint Development Task Force. They are significant and merit careful consideration. We will be taking that up in January for action. We also had a couple of things that we've put forward, one of which is, I think, going to be very significant, which is the changes that staff are working on for the next series of rail cars. Again, that should be a good discussion, but that concludes my report for today.
Okay. Is there a motion? There's a motion to approve. Okay, no actions. Okay. All right. The next order of business are the administrative items.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
I'd ask to remove item 15, but then move for approval for administrative actions 1 through 14 and 16 through 21 en bloc.
You have a motion?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Benjamin.
Remove item 7.
No objection.
Okay. So item 7 and 15 are removed, and with those two exceptions, the motion is for approval of items 1 through 6, 8 through 14, and 16 through 21. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Item 7?
Madam Chair, I will move.
I'm a little bit concerned. First of all, I wanted to comment that the quality of the financial impact information that we're now receiving has improved immeasurably. We do now have some idea as to where the money's coming from and what it is and how much it is and where it fits into the budget. So I very much appreciate the fact that I have this opportunity to actually figure out what's going on in this project. I was struck by the fact that all of the money appears to be FY09 money, but it was going to be spent in FY08, or portions of it, at least 2 months of it. Now, there's a little note here that says that we won't be billed until FY09, but if I remember how this authority keeps its books, the costs are accrued as the services are rendered. So I was trying to figure out how we were going to pay for the 08 portion of this if we're going to only approve it for 09.
Actually, Mr. Benjamin, you're exactly right in what you're saying, and Helen and I have talked about this. We need to change the dates of the audit contract. We've completed the 08 audit. The money was budgeted to pay them. So this is in order for us to continue the contract, but the payment and the services would be received in 09.
Although the contract will go starting in May, there will be no services in May and June. Okay.
Okay.
There's a motion.
I'll
second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. For item 15, I'm going to recuse myself, and I'm going to turn it over to the vice chair to handle this.
Item 15 is a request for approval of a 180-day extension of the master development agreement period, negotiation period for the Morgan Boulevard Joint Development Project, and an authorization for staff to continue negotiations with Garrett Morgan Boulevard Joint Venture, the selected developer. Is there a motion to approve this item? Questions or discussions? This is a Maryland item, so I'm looking at Maryland.
I am not familiar with what's
okay.
going on in this one. Sorry.
All right. Is there anything that we ought particularly to know about this? I mean, this seems pretty routine, but.
This has been a challenging project. One of the it's been an initiative of the county, the state, and WMATA to work with the developer to effect an assemblage of land that makes this property a much better overall development project. There have been complications associated with the assemblage of property, but we've been working with the county and the state to facilitate that. Most recently, we got an alternate. We've seen, and the county has seen, an alternate development plan that goes forward without the complete assemblage, but with most of the assemblage in place. We think this is a significant improvement and a reasonable basis for going forward, and we would recommend going forward with the 180-day extension.
Same basis. You're just not ready yet to bring forward. You want more time to work on it. Okay, very good. Are there any questions or further discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much. Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Item 11, are there any reports from any of the jurisdictions? Mr. Graham is gone. Don't know if there's any other report from D.C. Okay. Mr. Benjamin? No. Virginia? Mr. Kaufman? No. Okay. Pursuant to Roman numeral 6.4 of the board procedures, I move that we meet in an executive session to discuss contractual matters.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Happy holidays to everyone.